Welcome to the Legally Speaking Podcast. You are now listening to season 7 of the show. I'm your host, Rob Hanna. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by Jonathan Merrill. Jonathan is the founder and managing principal of Merrill Family Law. 14 years strong, Merrill Family Law is one of the top firms in Chicagoland. Jonathan completed his Bachelor's of Arts degree in Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He received his Juris Doctor from the Chicago-Kent College of Law. But Jonathan is not your stereotypical, old-fashioned family law attorney. No, no. He believes a case-winning attorney-client relationship isn't created through formalities and handshakes, but through friendship and honesty. Jonathan specializes in taking people through one of the most distressing situations they'll ever go through, often for the first time in their life. Jonathan is the definition of a modern family lawyer, offering a refreshing look at what the future of law could and should become. So, a very warm welcome, Jonathan.
Rob, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Ah, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. And before we dive into all your amazing projects, experiences, we do have a customary icebreaker question here on the Legally Speaking Podcast, which is, on the scale of 1 to 10, 10 being very real, what would you rate the hit TV series Suits in terms of its reality of the law, if you've seen it?
I've seen it. I was never a huge fan of it. I mean, as far as reality, obviously, any TV show, you kind of take it with a grain of salt, but I would give it a reality rating of probably a 5. I mean, obviously, you know, beautiful actors and actresses going through an office and doing their thing and, you know, the law and the drama. Obviously, some bits and pieces are realistic, but a lot of it, it's just made for TV. So you're not seeing, like, the daily grind of a lawyer, the ins and outs of a law firm that you would normally see, but I would give it a 5.
Yeah, and I give it a 5 as well, and I completely agree. I think there's a lot of Hollywood in there, a little bit of reality, but 5's fair comment. So let's go on to talk all about you, Jonathan. So would you mind telling our listeners a bit about your background and career journey?
Sure, of course. So I'm a family law attorney. My background, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. I'm born and raised in the suburbs of Chicago. My father was a criminal attorney, so that kind of exposed me to the law a little bit. I knew I didn't want to do criminal law, but I thought law might be in my future. Went on to college at the University of Wisconsin. Then I wasn't sure if I wanted to go into law at that point, but I figured, you know what, a legal background, a law degree can't hurt no matter what you decide to do. So ended up going to law school in Chicago, moved back home for that. And in my first year or two as a law student, I started as a law clerk in a divorce and family law firm. And I really had no idea I wanted to do that, but it kind of just kind of caught my attention. And I knew it was something that was never going to be dull. I knew I didn't want to be like a transactional attorney or a tax attorney. I needed that excitement in my career. So I really gravitated towards it and worked there throughout law school after passing the bar exam. Worked at another family law firm for about 7.5 years, and then ultimately went off and started my own practice 14 years ago.
Yeah, and how successful that has been. But as you mentioned, let's go through that stage then, because you were studying for the JD, you were a law clerk in a family law firm in Chicago. Was this the first time you were exposed to a legal environment, and what were your experiences working at a firm like that during that time?
So that was my first real exposure to working day in, day out in a law firm. And when you see family law for that first time, you're like, it's that holy shit moment where you're like seeing, you know, you hear stories about crazy divorces and you see stuff on the news about celebrity divorces. But when you're in the trenches and you're dealing one-on-one with your clients who are going through it and, you know, oftentimes high conflict divorces with issues regarding the children on the line, high stake finances. So that really kind of gave me a shock to my system, which is what I need as a person. I need that shocking moment that keeps me interested and gravitates me. Also, the human to human contact and going through real life experiences is what really drew me to it.
Yeah, and you obviously fell in love with it, and you obviously then got the entrepreneurial bug and set up your own firm. Would you mind sharing that process of setting up your own law firm with us, and maybe any mistakes you made that you'd say to others to avoid?
Sure. So any process, it's trial and error. I always knew I ultimately wanted to have my own firm. And I utilized my experiences as a law clerk and then as an attorney for the first 7 years of being a lawyer to kind of figure out what I liked and didn't like, and, you know, how people acted towards me as, you know, my boss, and how they acted towards admins or staff. A lot of things I saw I didn't like. And there were things, obviously, that I was, you know, taking in as far as knowledge about how to practice and learning from my superiors. But all along the way, I was kind of taking mental notes about, if I start my own firm, these are things I like and don't like. A big thing that really I always thought of, like, I want to treat my employees better than anybody. I want my law firm to be based on people that come to work knowing that their boss and the owner of the firm deeply cares about them. So ultimately, I started my own practice, which was a leap of faith. This was in 2009. I had just had my second kid. There was a recession. You know, I had probably 20 or so clients of my own, and I just got sick of being I was just not satisfied. I needed, like, to kind of get more out of my career and be able to grow my practice on my terms. So I left, and, you know, I was in a crappy little office, just me. I actually took my law clerk with me, actually, at the time, but it was just the two of us. And you make a lot of mistakes. You know, you want to spend money, but you don't have money. And, you know, you incur debt because you think you need to spend money on certain things, and then you make mistakes on certain marketing plans. So it's a lot of bumps in the road and a lot of failure that led to success. So I use those failures to learn from them, obviously, and ultimately, you know, succeed in what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I love that you touched on culture in terms of really caring for the people that work for you. So from an internal perspective, that's amazing. And I think a lot of law firms can take some real lessons from that. But what sets sort of Merrill Family Law apart from other family law firms in Chicagoland area generally, from a sort of client perspective, maybe listening in?
From a client perspective, you said?
Yeah.
Well, I think we have the infrastructure of a large firm. We have over 20 attorneys. But we have the feeling of a more smaller firm, a more intimate firm. So I, you know, pride myself on having good relationships with my clients. And most people walk into a law firm and they're expecting this guy in a suit and a business relationship. And, you know, it's going to be super intense, every conversation. I kind of take the opposite approach. I want to become friendly with my clients or a potential client so they feel comfortable with me. A lot of my colleagues at a lot of other law firms, you just don't get that feel. They're all business. And again, at the end of the day, they're not hiring me to be their friend. They're hiring me to do a job and get them results, which is, of course, what we're out, you know, to do. But I really take pride in establishing that personal connection. A human connection is like human to human as opposed to necessarily attorney to client. So I think that's what really separates us. I try to breed that into my staff and, you know, try to create comfortable relationships between attorney and client that you might not find elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And lawyers are humans, and there's more to a lawyer than just being the law, right? You know, they are people, they have feelings, they have thoughts. And I love the fact that you meet people where they're at and really get that connection with your clients. Let's get back to the internal perspective. Why have none of your employers ever asked you for a raise in over 13 years?
Okay, that's funny you ask, because I posted that on LinkedIn and a lot of people were like, that's not true. There's no way that's true. But I can unequivocally tell you that is 1,000% true. In the 14 years since I've had my firm, I've never had an employee ask me for a raise. And that's because it's constantly on the top of my mind. I remember at my old firm, you know, I'd just be dying for my employer to give me the opportunity to explain why I should get a raise. If my employees are working hard, if they're loyal to the firm, they're helping others, they're all in, and all of them have been, they're going to get a raise, and they're going to get a raise likely more than once a year. And I've always been on top of that. It always is something that I'm thinking about because I picture myself in their situations. And I was always angling to see how I could make more money, which, again, that's why we go to work. Many people obviously need the money, and that's why you have a job. But I don't want my employees to have to think about that. And it's uncomfortable to have to ask your employer for a job. So again, this all kind of goes back to that. I'm always trying to do whatever I can to make my employees happy, feel like they're wanted, that are appreciated. And by doing that, I'm always checking when their last raise was and making sure I get ahead of it before they've had to ask me. And no one has ever had to ask me in 14 years.
And, you know, what a great story that is, because ultimately, counteroffers are the very last resort. And you don't want to be having to counteroff people, you know, because you haven't seen the value in them earlier on and other firms or other organizations have. And I think, you know, it is a two-way relationship, you know, that your people are your business and you need to really look after them and absolutely give them, showcase that you value them genuinely by ensuring that they are valued and they are priced at the marketplace. Because ultimately, it's very expensive to replace good people. Not only just the cost of placing people, the time. You can't just find that person you've trained, you developed, who knows your systems, knows your processes. So genuinely valuing them, genuinely looking after them, I think that's a great, great process and culture that you have. So let's talk about some of the work then. What type of family law cases have you and your team represented over the years?
So obviously, any type of family law, that mostly comprises of divorce cases. You know, whether it be a short marriage, a long-term marriage, with money, without a ton of money, issues related to the kids, no kids. That's really our wheelhouse is, you know, divorce cases between two spouses. Obviously, historically husband and wife, but now in our modern age, we have same-sex marriages. So that's obviously prevalent now too. But the majority of our cases are divorces. We obviously also handle prenuptial and postnuptial agreements as well as paternity cases where the parties have a child but are not married.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it is kind of no 2 days the same in the sense that, you know, there's a lot of different cases and variety, and you have a wealth of experience in obtaining favorable outcomes for your clients in multi-million dollar matrial, if I can get my words out, estates and contested custody suits. So can you tell us a bit more about one memorable high profile case you've successfully handled?
Well, we have a lot of high-profile cases, and, you know, these cases can get, you know, they get dicey, and obviously the biggest components to any case are the attorneys and the parties. If you have two reasonable, you know, experienced lawyers and two parties who are rational, then, you know, in all likelihood, your case is going to get resolved the right way. But when you have someone who's kind of not all there mentally or is super emotionally charged, then things can go off the rails really quick. So, and without pointing to a specific example, you know, we have many cases that, you know, frankly could have been resolved a lot quicker, but certain things can happen that, you know, create delays in the case, whether it be domestic violence or issues related to the kids or someone has a drug or alcohol problem, these kind of issues. In high-profile cases or even, you know, simpler cases can really drag things on. So, I mean, it's important, obviously, to control what you can control. And we do everything we can to make sure our clients understand the process, understand how we can, you know, get the best results for them. And a lot of that depends on their behavior as well.
Yeah, and I love that you talk about emotions, because when emotions go up, sometimes intelligent decisions go down, right? And I think, you know, when you're in a very highly charged emotional situation, sometimes, you know, rational and, you know, things that you think would be sensible just doesn't seem to happen. So how do you then ensure your clients are fully informed, prepared throughout the legal process to perhaps ensure their emotions don't get the better of them?
Yeah, and I mean, look, it's easier said than done. You know, these people are going through probably the most emotional process they're ever going to go through in their lives. And it's even more exacerbated when you have children. And, you know, if your children are in the middle of this, or you got one spouse saying that they should have the children more than the other, of course, that's going to spark major emotion. And, you know, often emotion sparks people to be irrational. When someone's irrational, it's our job to kind of try to hone them in and try to, you know, have them settle down, realize, you know, how the law applies to their case, things that they need to do to settle down, which will ultimately be in everyone's best interest. But again, sometimes it's easier said than done when you're dealing with such raw emotion like I described.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I completely understand that. I guess this is quite a difficult question probably to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because you deal with divorce cases daily. What are your thoughts surrounding divorce? Is divorce ever a good thing? Time for a short break from the show. Are you looking for a way to get your firm working more efficiently and profitably while ensuring a better work-life balance for your team? Well, if you haven't considered our sponsor, Clio, I'm here to strongly recommend that you do. I absolutely love working with Clio. Not only is it the world's leading legal practice management and legal client relationship management software, it also has a really solid core mission to transform the legal experience for all, something I personally support. What sets Clio apart for me? It's their dedication to customer success and support. There are lots of legal softwares out there, but I know from talking to Clio users that their support offering is miles ahead of the rest with their 24/5 availability via email, in-app chat, and over the phone. Yes, you can actually call in and speak to someone. Clio is also the G2 crowd leader in legal practice management in comparison to 130 legal practice management softwares and has been for the last 14 consecutive quarters. G2 Crowd is the world's leading business solutions review website. You can check Clio's full list of features and pricing at www.clio.com/legally-speaking. That's www.clio.com/legally-speaking. Now back to the show.
I think it's very, very often a good thing. And it's it used to have this stigma and, you know, taboo, like, oh, those people are getting divorced or, you know, something must be really wrong. And look, oftentimes marriages are going to break down. I believe it is somewhat in human nature that, you know, as much as people commit to each other for the sake of, you know, the love they have for each other and, you know, creating a family, people change, emotions change, circumstances change. There are so many factors out of people's control that can impact a relationship, whether it be finances or, you know, health. There's a million things that can happen. So, you know, people are, no matter what, at some point, most people, and the statistics show it, are going to kind of lose that love and feeling they had on the day they got married and might not continue forever. Of course, there are many exceptions and relationships that are last forever, but oftentimes, for whatever the reason, like, you know, financial, emotional, people have drug and alcohol issues, children, health issues, people change, circumstances change, and you need a mechanism for getting to that next chapter in your life. And oftentimes, as much as there is that negative connotation with divorce, it is a liberating process for people once it's finally done that enables them to free themselves of a situation that they weren't happy in and ultimately move on to a chapter of their lives where they can be happy. And ultimately, so can their spouse and their children, even though it might take a little while to realize, will often in the end realize that their parents are happier and better off once the divorce is over.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have some friends, in fact, you know, I've got divorced parents myself, but, you know, friends whose divorced parents have become good friends and, you know, they have been able to sort of iron it out. And it's you know, it creates a good, you know, positive dynamic for the overall family. And look, the only constant in life is change, right? I think we're all very aware of that. And, you know, we're both into social media and probably big fans of Gary Vee. And, you know, Gary Vee says definition of success is waking up and feeling good. Right. If you don't feel good and you're in a relationship that's not, you know, life is too short. You know, you have to make decisions to ensure that you do wake up every day to the best of your ability and feel in a good mood. So I want to also ask you another question, because this is putting you on the post. In your words, what makes an inadequate lawyer, and why does this annoy you so much?
There's nothing worse. First of all, there are plenty of inadequate lawyers there. They might think they're good and they may have some success, but what I would say is the worst quality a lawyer can have is a lawyer that overpromises and underdelivers and creates those unrealistic expectations for their clients, which just has a terrible chain reaction on everybody. I can't tell you how many attorneys I've seen and encountered along the way who are, you know, kind of giving advice to their clients when they walk in the door and they're asking what they can get and how the law applies, and they give them advice that it's just not attainable. It's not realistic. There's no basis in the law. But unfortunately, clients who come in and look to attorneys for advice, they don't know any differently, and they have this expectation in their head that, oh my gosh, you know, I should be getting this much money, or I should get this much alimony, when there's no basis in the law for that. And unfortunately, the ramifications of that is you go into a case, they, you know, believe that they have this entitlement to this amount, even though the law doesn't substantiate it. The case goes on. They don't believe that our position, you know, the client on the other side doesn't believe that our position is rational. And unfortunately, you have to litigate or get to a judge, spend lots of time, lots of stress, lots of money to get to the right answer. And in the end, you know, it's at that point that the client has finally realized that when they walked into that attorney's office that first day, they were sold a bag of bullshit, basically, that led to likely months and even years of litigation that was just unnecessary.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, you know, it's important that you work with lawyers that you trust. I think that's a really important word, you know, when it comes to all of this, is having that deep-rooted trust. Now, I want to talk about your philosophy in business, because your philosophy is to build strong, trusting relationships with clients founded on compassion, sound legal strategy, and often and frequent communication. So how do you balance compassion and legal strategy when representing clients?
Well, first things first, you can't just tell clients what they want to hear. If you're a lawyer who just is a yes man or woman and just tells your clients what they want to hear, it's going to lead to the situation I just discussed. You're not helping anybody. A lot of lawyers think they need to just say yes to whatever the client's asking for. You're not helping the client. So obviously, that's part of the communication. You have to be upfront with your client, and you're going to have to give them answers as their lawyer that they may not want to hear, but in the end, they'll thank you, because if they can't trust you to give them adequate, truthful advice, then there's really no point to you being their advisor. So, I mean, it's telling them what they want to hear. And like I alluded to before, too, you know, not just acting as this uptight lawyer that, you know, this connotation of every lawyer is just all business. You have to be somewhat of a friend to them. I've always kind of adopted that ideal that, especially when you're dealing with issues like this that are so emotional, so raw, so personal, you really need to act like a human to human as opposed to an attorney to client sometimes. And, you know, you also have to be firm with them. If they're acting in a way that's not helping them, not helping their kids, not helping their case, you got to sit them down and be, you have to stop doing this, or you have to change this. And if you don't give them those kind of words of wisdom, you know, they're going to take advantage of it, and nobody is going to be better off in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's two outcomes in this world. There's results or there's excuses, right? And I think if you're a lawyer that's just saying, well, you know, it could be this, could be that, I love that you are very much, I'm going to tell them perhaps what's not music to their ears, but so they can build trust in me, so at least they know that I'm coming at it completely openly with absolutely all the right information to then find a strategy and a solution that might be best suited to their needs, rather than trying to sugarcoat and tell people what they want with all these excuses, this, that, and the other. So I love that. Right. How do you stay top of your game then? How do you stay up to date with changes in family law and ensure legal strategies remain effective? So I'm sure how you practice from day one isn't necessarily exactly the same it is today.
Sure. Well, you always got to be abreast of the law, especially in family law, especially with the onset of, you know, same-sex marriages, non-traditional families, those laws are kind of always changing. And, you know, we're at the forefront of that as attorneys who are practicing law every day, who are in court every day, dealing with judges. We're at the forefront of that, and obviously noticing issues that come before the courts, changes in the law. We're up to speed, obviously, with like the legislature and bills that are being passed, and obviously case law and precedent that's being set by the court that oftentimes can be with cases of our own. So we're always on top of things, always up to speed on changes of the law, and we're often part of those changes in the law too.
Yeah, no, I like that, because you're right. You absolutely are part of those changes as sort of practicing attorneys. You're seeing things, and you're obviously looking at things and looking how things can be improved. But let's take a break from the law, but stick to the law slightly, because in addition to being a family attorney, you are the host of the Chicago Divorce Podcast. So what guests have you had on your show? What have been some of the popular discussions you've had? Give us a taste.
Yeah, well, I mean, we try to use a wide spectrum of people. Obviously, you know, we're trying to make it educational for people who are thinking about divorce, thinking about who are going through divorce, who have been through divorce. So a lot of people we've had relationship experts on, which has been a fun topic to discuss, you know, perhaps marriages that work and don't work, types of people, types of personalities that can conflict with each other. We've had experts that, you know, have given their input on child custody issues, fellow attorneys, lots of different, essentially pieces of the puzzle when you would go through a divorce, and also try to have fun with it too. So we've had a wide variety of guests that all kind of can contribute their own point of view to the divorce process and are people you might encounter along the way, from, you know, therapists to relationship experts to fellow practitioners, people who decide custody evaluations, stuff like that. So it's been a wide range. It's been fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I can tell how passionate you are about the show. And it sounds like you've had some great content and some great guests. So I'd encourage people to definitely check it out. Okay, let's talk about you personally outside of the law, because you're very open about your two most important things in life: family and enjoying life itself. So when you're not working, not running your law firm, how do you enjoy your life? Do you have any hobbies, any interests?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, in any area of any career, you have to get away, you have to decompress a little bit. And while work is always in my mind one way or another, and no matter what I'm doing, I do take time to kind of decompress. I love to play golf, I love to travel, I love live music, I love being with my kids and my family. So all those things are obviously a good break from the craziness that a work day could bring. And obviously can allow me to take a deep breath, regroup, and be ready to go back at it the next time I'm in the office. But you definitely need those things to get away. So I love golfing, like I said, love going to see concerts, traveling, being with my family. All those things kind of give me some stress relief.
Okay, and I like that. I'm going to ask you an even deeper question because, and you touched on it there, it's very hard to completely switch off. But how do you, you know, I believe don't just be in a moment unless you're in the moment and present. So how do you ensure that you show up and are present when it comes to family time, personal time, and try and put things to the back of your mind as best as possible to ensure you're not just wearing a mask and not enjoying yourself, but being present? And you may not have the answer, but I'm chucking it to you.
Yeah, that's probably an answer I'm still looking for. Because look, we all, in this day and age, everyone's got their phones on them, their laptops, their computers. I mean, things are popping up on your TVs. Like, you really, it's becoming more and more difficult to get away. And I'm, look, no, you, there's no one to blame more than me. Like, you know, my phone, I'm always looking at it. And I mean, my kids do the same thing. My wife does the same thing. So, I mean, it's something that I think as a society, we have to really learn to just shut down. Because look, even when you're sitting on a beach these days, you're probably looking at your phone and emails popping up. And again, I don't mind it. I think it perhaps takes away from like the commitment to family time or, you know, really getting out of it. But I'm just built in a way where I have to be somewhat connected to my office. And that's probably not a good thing, but I just, it's very difficult for me to completely disconnect from the world and not, you know, be available. And I just think in my line of work, although you do need to like decompress and get away, these people are going through highly stressful times, which is why, you know, good or bad, I always give out my cell phone to my clients, and most of them don't take advantage of it. They don't do it overly too much by texting me and stuff, but I just feel like I owe it to them to be around, but I do need to do a better job of getting away and just kind of shutting down.
Yeah, because there is real power in the pause. And I'm like you, I could probably do better. When you have a business, you know, you are signing up though, you know, that is the thing. And easily if you're in a very, you know, stressful or busy job, there is a real power in the pause. And I think if you struggle with this or you're relating to what we're sharing, then, you know, think about how you can change, because, you know, everything in life is, you know, workable. And I just encourage people to think about that a little bit more. Okay, before we wrap up, I want to get some final pieces of wisdom from you, Jonathan. For our listeners or potential people who might be interested in your zone of genius, what would be your advice for those interested in a career in family law in the US or indeed internationally?
It's a great career. It's for people that want a career where you will never be bored, you will never not have excitement. Once you think you've seen it all, you'll wake up tomorrow and then something else will happen and you're, you know, shocked that it is a very fulfilling career. You know, you are spending your career helping people, getting out of very difficult situations, physically, emotionally, you're helping children, and it really is that human contact. It doesn't take an expert to, you know somebody and how a divorce might impact them. But if you can kind of help them get through that process and have them come out on the other side happy, and, you know, the family as a whole can be happy, it's a very fulfilling feeling. So, you know, starting your own firm, creating a culture at your own business, and being able to help people and make your employees happy, it's just a great feeling waking up every day knowing that I'm going to help people and that I'm going to make my employees feel good and welcome at the place they're working. So I wouldn't change a thing. And if I had to do it all over again, I would be right here.
There you go. You can't get any more of a ringing endorsement than that. So if our listeners, which I'm sure they will, Jonathan, would like to know more about your firm or indeed the Chicago Divorce podcast, where can they find out?
Easiest way to remember is chicagodivorce.com. You can find us. That's our website. My contact info is there. But always find me on LinkedIn as well, but feel free to reach out. I'm happy. Love connecting with people, regardless of what the topic is.
Absolutely. And we'll make sure we share all those links and your socials with this particular episode too. That just leads me to say thank you so, so much, Jonathan, for coming on the show. It's been a real pleasure having you. Love learning more about your journey and your story and what you're getting up to. So wishing you lots of continued success with your career, with your business and future pursuits. But for now, from all of us on the Legally Speaking podcast, over and out. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you like the content here, why not check out our world-leading content and collaboration hub, the Legally Speaking Club, over on Discord. Go to our website, www.legallyspeakingpodcast.com, for the link to join our community there. Over and out.